What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season, because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks, and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
You know, it's 52 degrees in New Hampshire right now, 58 in Baltimore. I say that only because we tend to think that, you know, June and summertime, it's hot everywhere, but not necessarily the case. Here, though, it's 71 degrees, 72 around the area and going up to 87, so basic summertime for us. Let's talk about Doge and Elon Musk. What did they accomplish? What didn't they accomplish? Alex Narasta joins us now, Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Do you care about Elon Musk, his personality, or about Tesla, his cars?
Not really.
I don't either. I mean, I don't care. Yeah. He can do what he wants, have as many kids as he wants, does whatever. I don't care what he does, as long as he doesn't hurt anybody. As far as his cars go, drive what you want. I have a concern about the batteries and how much the car is worth after the battery's worn out. But that's, look, if you want a Tesla, buy a Tesla. I don't care about any of that. What I do care about is the government and spending money and waste, and I want waste eliminated as much as anybody else. But the last thing in a world, let me make an example here. Alex, may I?
Yes, absolutely.
I had a cousin of mine that I got a garage door opener when I first got the house years and years ago, and he was in visiting for Christmas, and he said, let me come and help you put yours up because I just got one. And he discarded the instructions and just made a mess of the whole thing and left with it halfway done. And I said, well, did you have this kind of problem with yours? And he said, no, I paid somebody to do mine. And I bring that, it's a true story, and I bring that up as an example of, well, just because you say one thing, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're able to accomplish it. So what do we know about Doge and Elon Musk cuts?
So to use your metaphor from the story, I think it's actually worse. It's as if Elon Musk said that he was going to come over, but instead he broke the new garage door.
That's about what he did. I had to end up paying somebody to put it up, but yeah. Okay.
So I agree with the goals of Doge. I want to cut the federal government radically. I wanted to bring it under control. Musk promised $2 trillion in cuts at first. Then he promised $1 trillion. Then he promised $150 billion. The Doge website says 175, but when you trace the receipts and look at the actual cuts that happened, it's more like $20 billion in cuts. And if you were to take a look at all federal spending since Trump has taken office, you wouldn't be able to notice any kind of decline or any kind of blip in federal spending. That's not to say the stuff he did was bad. Of course, it was good, most of the things that he did, but you just can't see it because the numbers are really, really small. He overpromised and underdelivered, frankly.
Well, let's talk about what did he do.
So he cut federal workforce by a little bit. So we're going to see a lot of those numbers come up in September if people actually leave in the federal government. That doesn't matter that much because most of federal expenditures is not personnel. It's actually just shoveling money around. So it's not payroll, but that's positive. He also cut U.S. foreign aid. It's the USAID, which was positive, I think. But still, you're talking about a very, very small amount. You also canceled, he canceled a lot of bad contracts, in my opinion. Contracts that were wasteful, that were unnecessary. Contracts for things like funding nonprofits in the third world to make LGBT comic books, even though I have nothing wrong with LGBT people, but I don't think the government should fund the creation of comic books in Colombia about them. So he did a lot of good things like that.
I don't know why the government's in the comic book business at all.
Right? Yeah, I mean, the government shouldn't really be in any business, in my opinion, but definitely not comic books.
Right. So how did he break the garage door opener then, to go back to the analogy I made? If he did some things good, how did he break it?
So in some ways, he broke it in that they fired personnel at some agencies that actually made the private economy less efficient. So, for instance, if you want to drill for oil in the United States, you have to get prior approval by the federal government. And they accidentally fired the bureaucrat to approve oil drilling. So that put a halt to new oil drilling for a short period of time. That was a mistake. They fired a lot of people at the FDA whose job it is to approve new drugs. And they did this before changing any of the regulations that require prior approval for drugs and for oil and drilling. So those are just like some of the examples of just being really haphazard and sloppy about some of the cuts, not being thoughtful at all.
Somebody texted in, look, this is anecdotal, I get that. MAGA is all lies. My wife, and look, I don't know if this has anything to do with MAGA, but my wife watched four colleagues leave a three-letter government agency early, but now all four work for more with private contractors during their same jobs. So I know people that have retired from their government jobs with full pension and then gone back, and this is way before Trump or anybody else, and gotten a job consulting doing their same job, so then they were getting paid twice for the same work. That's pretty much, I don't know, that's an example of waste right there, right?
That's an absolute example of waste, but I think that the bigger picture, right, is that most of what the federal government does is wasteful and inefficient. And in order to bring real efficiency, which is the goal of DOGE, right, Department of Government Efficiency, you need to reduce the size and scope of federal activities. And what you need to do to accomplish that is to really get Congress involved to pass legislation. And as we all know, Congress doesn't like passing legislation. So DOGE, you know, the goals are noble, but they really didn't have the tools to be able to achieve the ends.
Somebody texts in and said Musk exposed the corrupt Democrats. Did he?
I think he showed an extent of like private funds or government funds going to like nonprofits that I think was unknown. That stuff wasn't hidden. It was on the USAID website. It's just that he made it much more widely known than it was before, which was one of the positive things that he did, in my opinion.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We'll come back talking about Elon Musk and DOGE, and we'll talk about what happens from here. Is DOGE still around even though Elon Musk is gone? And there is a concern about some sensitive data that they may have had access to. But then again, really, when it comes to sensitive data these days, who doesn't have access to it? Talking to Alex Narasta, Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Elon Musk made a lot of noise with, you know, the chainsaw appearance at the convention and so forth. But How much was actually cut from government waste and what happens as we move forward? 621 traffic now, WWL. All right, 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL. From the texts that are coming in, some people love President Trump and Elon Musk and think they walk on water. Others think they're the Antichrist. I'm somewhere in between there where I just care about the policies and what the results of those are. Alex Narasta is our guest, Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. You're talking about people who are fired and had to be hired back. I don't know how you put a price tag on all of this. So how do you, with the balance sheet, how do you determine what was good and what was bad? And moving forward, for example, I know there were cuts to the National Weather Service. Now they had to hire more people because of the shortages. Was it a net gain or not? How do you determine that, Alex?
So I think you need to just take a look at the activities that we think the government should be doing and whether DOGE cut some of those activities. In some cases, we could say, absolutely, he did a job that was worth doing, like cutting off money to some of these nonprofits, reducing some benefits for some federal workers, getting some federal workers out the door. Absolutely positive. In other areas, he moved a little too fast and made things a little worse than they should have been, like firing bureaucrats who approve oil drilling without changing the regulations that require prior approval. So, you know, I think on net, it's positive, but the amount of heat it generated was not worth the light that it revealed, probably. We didn't get that many cuts. The federal government is spending more money this year than it did last year. It will continue to do so. And without getting Congress involved, we really can't make the cuts that DOGE made permanent, nor can we get the real cuts we need to get the budget under control.
So net gain, net loss with DOGE?
Or net gain,
Musk?
But very small.
Okay. So when it comes to the future and who's still in the government with DOGE, even though Elon Musk is gone, is there still a DOGE and who is it that's running it? And tell me what that looks like.
Yeah, so there are little DOGE teams that are operated out of the Office of Management and Budget that are in different agencies who are mainly going to be changing payment structure systems to save money here and there and small things, review contracts, make other kinds of technology improvements to try to reduce the amount of money the government is spending on its internal operations, and maybe find some other small cuts that OMB, Office of Management and Budget, can make, which is run by Russ Vought. So they're going to be there. There's going to be a little bit of an efficiency push for the rest of the Trump administration because of DOGE. But on the big picture of things, you're not going to be able to tell there's any difference.
When it comes to, somebody texted in about, please ask your guests to comment on the cuts in spending that Congress will not approve, the ones where Congress has to pull back the funding. It's been reported some cuts were identified, but Congress will not do the hard work and take the money back. Is that accurate?
There is some accuracy to that, but it's mainly about like the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, mm-hmm. Green energy subsidies, because not all of those subsidies have been paid out yet. So it's about trying to claw some of those back. Congress is not going to claw very many of them back. They're loath to do that for reasons that don't make any sense, in my opinion. And they haven't really substantially cut Medicaid. They just sort of slightly reduced the rate of growth. So Congress isn't acting seriously about the budget deficit either.
So it's a lot of frou-frou, a lot of stuff, but not really a lot of substance. A lot of style.
Yeah, it's a typical thing when a new Republican government comes into office, frankly. I wish it were different. They talk mm-hmm. a tough game when the Democrats are in power. They don't follow through when they're in power.
Yeah, it seems like nobody does anything when it comes to spending, whether it's Republicans or Democrats.
That's right.
Like to spend whatever you give them and what they don't have. Thank you. I appreciate it. Alex Narasta, Vice President for Economic Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. So a net gain, but not much when it comes to DOGE. And I think maybe part of the problem might be celebrating a little bitty thing like this as a victory when the bigger question of outlandish government spending just continues to go on. We'll talk to Jeff Palermo about LSU baseball when we come back. Something the head of FEMA said that kind of got me scratching my head. We'll be back, WWL. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. To finish this up, I was talking about Apollo 13 before and made that analogy. Jordan Fiegel reminded me, we spoke to one of the Apollo 13 astronauts. It couldn't have been Fred Hayes because he died, and it couldn't have been Buzz Aldrin, so it was the other one. And the only thing I remember him saying is that they definitely did not hold each other to keep each other warm, as was portrayed in the movie. He was adamant about getting that point across. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
You doing well now? You weren't doing so well for a while last night, were you?
I think a lot of LSU fans were saying, what is going on here? It got a little dicey there when you watched Little Rock put up five runs in the second inning, and you know, even LSU made an error out in the field, and it just had this feeling like, is this really going to happen? But a couple innings after Little Rock scores those five runs, LSU finally responds. They get the big three-run double by Ethan Frye. Luis Hernandez hits the home run a little bit later on, and then Cason Evans last night. My goodness, that is about as dominating of a performance as you'll see when you absolutely need it, to strike out nine in a row, go six innings, give up just one run, strike out 12. He walks the bases loaded in the seventh inning, but gets a strikeout to get out of the inning. Just a lot of special stuff last night, and really a remarkable game, and LSU season continues.
So let me ask you a couple of different questions. Was there a point in the game where Jay Johnson kind of pulled everybody together and said, just almost akin to a basketball coach calling a timeout or something when things were not going their way, and got everybody again and said, look, blah, 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 we got a this, that, the other thing? Or was it more just calm and letting things turn around on their own?
Well, I think what he kept telling his guys is, let's keep having some quality at bats. And actually, during the TV broadcast, you got to hear from him, when they were down by four. And in fact, right after they had a chance to cut into the lead, you know, after Little Rock scored five runs in the second, LSU was the visiting team. So in the top of the third, LSU gets the bases loaded. And unfortunately, Jake Brown wasn't able, with the bases loaded and two outs, just couldn't come up with the hit. He flies out to left field. And we heard from Jay Johnson there in one of those in-game interviews with broadcasters that I think all coaches prefer not to do, but have to do. And
you can tell they don't want to do it. That's apparent. No, that is so clear. Jay, I don't know why they make them, but go ahead.
Yeah, and that was a tough spot. And even the announcers, Dave Neal and Ben McDonald, mentioned that was not an easy interview for them to do, because here they are, they're down by four runs. They just missed an opportunity to at least cut into the lead. And nothing was going right for LSU there in the bottom of the third. But Jay said at that point, hey, we just got to keep having quality at bats. Just keep having quality at bats. And then in the next inning, that's exactly what happened. They continued to just kind of stay with their process. And then finally, they got the big hit. And it came from Ethan Frye, who just has had an unbelievable season and has become LSU's best hitter at this point.
Yeah, I make football coaches do it too. I don't watch a lot of basketball, so I don't know about that. But it's like, you know what? Let them coach the game. You can interview them after the game. They're a little busy right now, and it's going to be just crap anyway that they say. It's going to be the same old stuff, so why even bother them? You understand what I'm saying? I don't know why they do that.
Yeah. I think the Little Rock coach enjoyed it, though. He was having fun with them. But, a tip of the cap to Little Rock to do what they did. I mean, they gave LSU everything they wanted. And, you went into that. We talked about it yesterday. It just seemed like the advantage. I mean, LSU was huge favorites. The advantage was with them. Little Rock had already been through all their pitching. And you're just wondering, when were they ever going to eventually kind of run out of steam? And, even when LSU took a 7-5 lead, you kind of thought, okay, LSU's probably going to win this game by four or five runs, and then Little Rock comes right on back. Finally they got to Cason Evans, who was really starting to tire out there a little bit, and they got it back within one. But LSU responded there late with three more runs, and, Jared Jones hitting that two-run homer, that was a pretty big explosion coming out of the dugout there from the LSU players and the coaching staff, because they know – how much of a struggle here it's been recently for Jared Jones, and for him to really lock in on a 2-0 fastball right over the middle of the plate, and he just hammered it out of the park. That was really nice to see, and it was a It was a huge moment late in the game, and it was the insurance runs that LSU certainly needed.
All right, it's 6:50, 10 till 7. We'll take a break. Jeff Palermo's got a story up at WWL.com that's very interesting. He's the WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We'll talk about Zach Cowan when we come back. Also, look ahead to the Super Regional. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:56, 4 till 7. Tigers win. Jeff Palermo joins us, WWL.com, columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Got a good column up at WWL.com. Let me read a line from it. Zach Cowan made his first start of the season but was pulled with just one out in the second inning after allowing five earned runs. So many questions from that one sentence. Did Jay Johnson make a mistake starting him? Did Zach Cowan just have a bad night? And what does that say about his future as a starter?
Well, it was the first start that Zach Cowan had made all season, but mm-hmm. this is a veteran pitcher, a guy that's been around who was the Friday night starter at Watford last season. I thought it was the right decision. I think in a game like that where it's win or go home, you want the more experienced guy. I mean, they had two options. They could have gone with Zach Cowan or Cason Evans. It was going to be one of those two guys. I mean, the way the game played out Sunday, the fact that LSU did not use those two guys that was the thing that you were hanging on to as an LSU fan. Well, at least we got Cowan and Evans going on Monday. LSU has the pitching advantage for sure in this game against Little Rock. And so between Cowan and Evans, who is a freshman, you're going to go with Cowan, a guy who has started before. Evans has made just a couple of starts. Go with the experienced guy, but he just didn't have the normal break on his slider. He was leaving it up in the zone. And Little Rock, as we talked about yesterday, Tommy, was just a very confident team at the plate. And as Ben McDonald said during the TV broadcast yesterday, they weren't trying to do too much. You know, if the pitch was on the outer half, they went the other way with it. They weren't trying to hit the ball over the ballpark. They were just trying to put the bat on the ball, make solid contact. And, and Cowan left a lot of pitches up in the zone for them to hit. So it was the right decision. And when you sat there and you were watching the game, and it really was like a nightmare scenario, because Zach Cowan has been really good for you all season long. And you thought you had the advantage over Little Rock because you're going to go with Cowan and you got to take him out in the second inning. And you sat there and you said, as an LSU fan, well, if Cason Evans doesn't have his stuff, then LSU's not going to win this game. But Cason Evans was electric. I mean, just absolutely. When you strike out nine guys in a row, man, that is – I mean, he was pitching with such tempo, and he's got like the split finger pitch that just dives out of the zone. Little Rock just didn't have a chance with it. They were trying to break up his tempo, and he was in such a groove. And I think the fact that him coming in there and stabilizing the game gave LSU's hitters confidence. Okay, eventually we're going to score some runs against Little Rock, who is just depleted pitching-wise. And that's exactly how the game played out. Evans threw up a bunch of zeros on the scoreboard. LSU's hitters just kept at it. They got the big hit from Fry. As I mentioned, a home run from Luis Hernandez to tie the game. And then, you know, just eventually just pulled away and got the victory.
Nine Ks in a row, get the crowd into it too. I'll tell you what. Let's talk about West Virginia next time you join us. Tell me real quick, 20 seconds worth of West Virginia.
West Virginia, more of a small ball team. They're a really good team, and they've played very well away from their home ballpark this season. Should be a fun series coming up. We'll find out at 9 a.m., Tommy, when that series will start. And we'll get the game times as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Go to WWL.com right now. You can see his column about the game last night. Tim Temple joins us. We come back, Louisiana Insurance Commissioner. We'll talk about the session. Also, talk about what Jacob Rowe was talking about yesterday with stated value policies. We'll also talk with Pat Connick, Louisiana State Senator. A lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, WWL. All right, 7:23. I'll tell you, who are you? The answer to that after the news, and I'll play it again for you if we have time. But Tim Temple joins us now, Louisiana Insurance Commissioner, with far more important things to talk about. How you doing, Tim?
Hey, morning, Tommy. Sorry, I was a few minutes late.
That's all right. I know you're a busy man. Let me talk about, if I can, to begin here, with Jacob Rowe yesterday. He was talking to us about being able to insure the home for stated value. Your thoughts on that, both as a policy and in terms of results with insurance companies.
Yeah, look, you know, that policy, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to address a problem, which is affordability. They want to the insurance industry, the companies, to be able to offer a lower limit on your home. And, you know, the example is you've got a $100,000 home, but you've only got $20,000 left on your mortgage, and you only want to insure it for that $20,000. Mm-hmm. The issue that the industry has is that what part of the 20, you know, what portion of that home are you insuring? You know, if you have a total loss, then I get it. You get a $20,000 check. If you have a partial loss, are you going to get, you know, who determines if was half the home damaged? Do you only get 10,000 of the 20, or do you get the full 20? It's problematic. I can understand there are stated value policies that other states offer, so that let's say you only want to insure your roof for $10,000 or some portion of your home. There's a way to do that. This bill, I think, is going to introduce more problems than solutions. But look, if it becomes law, then we'll work with the industry and we'll try and bring, you know, the best product available to the consumers.
So tell me how that would work with deductible.
I don't know. That's just it. I mean,
because I was talking to Jacob yesterday, and some people took me to task for not understanding it. But for example, if in your case that you gave just now, Tim, if you have a $100,000 home and you only owe $20,000 on it, well, you owe that money. So that whatever that $20,000 insurance you get, that's got to go to the people that loaned you the money, right? I mean, they got to get paid first. Wouldn't that make sense?
Well, that's right. I mean, if you've got a loan, I mean, you know, and look, many of us have been in that situation, you know, with past hurricanes, and you've got a mortgage and you get a check and it's got your name and it's got your lender's name on it. Both have to sign off. So, like I said, I think this creates more problems than solutions. Mm-hmm. But if it becomes law, we'll work with the industry. We'll work with everybody and see what we can bring that hopefully accomplishes what the author wanted in that bill. Like I said, I get the intent. I understand that people just want to lower their insurance premiums, and I understand that, but I don't think that this is the vehicle that's going to do it.
Well, the other concern I have is if your home is paid for and it's $300,000 and you just want to get $50,000 of insurance, okay, but really what good is that going to do you? I don't, and again, that goes to the deductible. I guess you would have a lower deductible, but I think what's going to happen is people right now in the calm of, you know, June 3rd are going to say, when there's nothing in the Gulf, okay, fine, yeah, let's lower it. But then if something happens and the home gets wiped out, they're going to be looking for somebody to bail them out. And that's going to come down to the taxpayers. And it's like, well, wait a minute, I'm paying all of my insurance. Why? You see where I'm going with this?
Well, look, Tommy, not only that, but I think it presents a problem for the insurance agents that sell this product. Because, you know, in that scenario, you just gave $300,000 home and $50,000. They get major damage. Look, they're going to turn around and say to their agent, well, "You didn't convince me to buy enough insurance." Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the point is that it highlights the fact that there's a lot of frustration around affordability, and people are looking for any and every solution that there is. And again, I applaud the author for bringing this up as a concept, but I don't think it's going to. I think it's going to create more problems than fix issues.
And then I got to thinking about automobile insurance. I drive a 2014 CRV that's worth about $7,000. It's worth a lot more than that to me. So if something happens, they would total out the car and pay me $7,000. Would you then, with a $300,000 home, total it out and give the people $50,000 and walk away? Or then could I get a stated value policy for my car of $500, although I don't know what I would do with $500 if the car was totaled, because it's worth more than that to me. You see how my mind got to working here, Tim?
Yeah. Well, look, you know, on your car, you know, you can go without comprehensive coverage, right?
Right.
You don't have to buy the fizz dam.
Right.
You buy the liability. So
right. That's
a little bit different. But, yeah, it's a very similar type loss scenario. So, you know, again, look, we're working. We've passed a lot of good legislation last year. It is starting to work with regards to property. It's not, you know, as fast as people want, but we are seeing progress. So this is again, I appreciate the author. He's trying to bring solutions to the citizens of Louisiana, but I don't think this is one that's going to do as what we want it to, as intended.
So what is it that you're excited about or optimistic about passing in the legislature? What is it that you would not like to see passed or signed into law? Well, not that the governor has signed it,
you know,
or at least become law.
Right. Well, last week we had, the governor did a press conference on some legal reform bills, and you look, several of those were significant steps. I mean, for Louisiana, I'd say even, one was monumental, and that was a modified comparative fault by Emily Chenevere. A great bill, which basically says if you're more than 51% at fault for causing the accident, you can't recover damages. It's pretty common sense. 34 states have that law in existence, and it moves us in the right direction towards accountability. There were some other bills that were passed: Housley presumption, no pay, no play. There was a bill that gives discounts for commercial vehicles that have dash cameras, but there's already a lot of companies that do that. Those bills all move us in that right direction. And, Tommy, one of the things that on some other radio programs, I say that, when you're as far behind as we are, we can't afford to take steps forward. We need to be taking leaps and bounds to address this affordability issue. But those bills are headed in the right direction. The one that obviously I've had a lot of problems with, the press is aware of this, was House Bill 148, which was originally House Bill 567, I think, by Representative Robbie Carter, which is an authority bill with the commissioner.
Right.
And, it started off as focused on excessive rates and the authority that the commissioner myself would have, which I have maintained. We already have ability to deny excessive rates if they're not actuarially justified. We've done it over 20 times since I've been commissioner. We've denied rates. This removed the actuarial justification and made it completely subjective.
Well, when you say excessive, that's a subjective word, right?
Well, excessive, but the way the law was, excessive based on math.
That's
the way it was.
Yeah.
So now it's removed the math, and subjective is just whatever feelings, whatever, whatever the commissioner feels like. And they modified, amended the bill a little bit. They added back some math, if you will, but it makes the math, again, it's may, not shall. So it, again, still creates the subjective terms. But Tommy, two other things that they've added to this bill now is a confidentiality provision that companies are provided, a protection they're provided for doing business in Louisiana. Everybody has all different businesses, not just insurance, has a secret sauce or a special way of doing things. And this removes the confidentiality protection that insurance companies would have in the state of Louisiana. And it also created a clawback, if you will, so that a commissioner of insurance could determine that last year or 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago that I think that an insurance company made too much money, just subjective, and can claw back what would be determined as excessive profits and turn that around and give it to companies. And let me tell you, I don't know of any other state in America that does that. I don't know of any business in America where that is such that you have one person that has the power to say, Tommy, I think you your radio station, I think we paid you too much 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. We want some of the payback.
Yep, that's not the way America works, I don't think. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break and back talk to Pat Connick, state senator. Time now, WWL First News. Hi, 7:45, quarter till 8. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to Pat Connick, Louisiana state senator. How you doing, Senator?
Good morning, Tommy. Doing well.
Let's talk about Stated Value and Representative Jacob Breaux, whom you know well, and I just got off the phone with Tim Temple talking about it. HB 356, have you had a chance to look at this yet or not?
Which one is that?
Stated Value, where you could...
Yeah.
Thoughts on that, your thoughts on it.
I like it. I'm going to hear it in the committee tomorrow. It's going to be heard in committee, so I'll weigh the pros and cons. But at first glance, I really think it's something that can help people get some insurance that they can afford, and I'm all for that. The issue is going to be that when a storm comes and you don't have enough insurance to pay for the rest of your house, and what you're going to do. So, but there's pros and cons on both sides, and I have support for Jacob, and I think he can get this passed.
See, that's what my concern is, that in the calm of June 3rd and everything's quiet, it's like, yeah, I don't need all that insurance. But if something happens, you do. Somebody texted in and said it's going to save money because insurance companies are overvaluing homes. But are they or not? Or are they obligated to pay up to the limit of the policy if the house is totaled? And with inflation, are they overvaluing homes? Is that something the legislature should look at? Or anything?
Yeah, those are the questions we're going to be asking in Commerce Committee tomorrow, mm-hmm. when we meet. I would like to see hear what the insurance commissioner has to say. But we also got to make sure that we can't insurance that we can afford, and this may be one of the tools we need to have.
But if it doesn't do you any good, it's just a waste of money in all ways, right? I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out, Pat. Because if you got a $100,000 home and you get $20,000 of insurance on it, all right, what are you gonna do with it? And I think, like you, then after it happens, people are gonna be looking for the government to bail them out, which means you and me are people that have paid full price for their insurance. And
but if your home's not totaled, then you can use that money, that kind of thing. So we'll see.
Yeah. That's true, I guess. Or again, that would be subject to the mortgage, right?
Absolutely. And it'd be a risk that you take if you don't insure your house for the full value. But, unless the house is totaled, I think you should be okay. But
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. And as long as you don't come after the government looking for more money, I guess, is the other thing, too. Let's talk about other things proceeding in the legislature that got your attention.
They got a lot, Tommy. We had the mid-barrier tariff diversion discussion, the insurance reforms with the car insurance. You have the DOTD reforms, and you got the Belchase toll bridge that's still on the front burner.
Yeah, let's get to the Belchase toll bridge. What can be done about that? I got a picture of my vehicle and a license plate crossing after I got the transponder, whatever the hell I'm supposed to have. Hell can't freeze over cold enough for me.
Attention, sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore. From action-packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire, the fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus TNCs apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Me to pay that. What are you looking at as far as the Belchase Bridge tolls?
It's a bad deal. We had a hearing yesterday and then joint transportation. The DOTD wanted to take $1 million of the liquidated damages and put it towards a contract. We said, no, you're not doing that. That stays with the people in Belchase for road improvements. Mm-hmm. Find the money someplace else. But when you look at the deal, whoever negotiated the deal on behalf of the state, on behalf of the toll payers in Plaquemines Parish, they did not represent them very well. It's almost like malpractice in my mind of what they give away.
Well, who did negotiate it? That's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of, because it seems like somebody can sign on to a deal that indebts people for 30 years, but then they're out of it, and who knows who signed? Do you know who signed? Who negotiated?
And that was the discussion yesterday. There's a law firm out of Washington D.C. that we're going to be looking into what's their relationship with Plenary and how did all this go down? But they were the main guys who negotiated this thing. And it's like me and you making a contract and giving it to someone else to pay for it.
That's what it seems like to me. And, Pat, and I'm not alleging anything here, but my concern is, who knows if there were any shenanigans between this Washington, D.C. firm and Plenary, and I'm not saying there were, but if there could have been, well, then, you know, I wind up paying for that for 30 years, and they enrich themselves off of that, right?
And that's why we got to look into it. It may be nothing there, but it's something that you follow the trail, and that's where it's leading to. Who negotiated this deal that for 30 years? And like one instance, they have a operation maintenance cost set aside for $120 million for that bridge. And when you look at the bridge, the operation and maintenance cost of the bridge in Algiers, that's $20,000 a year. It's nothing. But why would you have this high operation and maintenance cost on the Belchase Bridge?
It doesn't make sense. And it's a smaller
bridge. Yeah, and why would you force the people in Plaquemines Parish to pay to take down the old bridge and take out the tunnel?
Something makes no sense here at all. Let me take a break. We'll talk about Mid-Barataria sediment diversion when we come back. 751, 9 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 756 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Pat Connick, Louisiana State Senator. Both of us Shaw graduates, I'll say. Pat, when it comes to Mid-Barataria sediment diversion, I had Gordon Dove and Simone Malaz on together about a week and a half ago, maybe. I don't know. I honestly don't. I wish I knew what was the right thing to do when it comes to Gordon Dove and Coastal Protection Restoration Authority and the plan that he touts that the Corps of Engineers designed. Is that, I don't understand who designed what, where, and how we got to Mid-Barataria sediment diversion, or what the Corps says about the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion or their plan. Where are we on all of this?
If you can imagine the Mississippi River Delta, that bird foot, and take one of those channels that's going into the Gulf and move it up 50 miles, just one of those channels, that's the diversion. That's the river being diverted into, south of Myrtle Grove, 50 miles up. Everyone that's south of there is against the diversion. That's what I'm finding out. We've spent already $750 billion on the project. I hate to see that go away, but the governor's basically pulled the plug on that project. They want to go with a smaller diversion that's going to take another, 8 to 10 years to develop it and to build and get the financing. But on the other side, the governor's saying that they can use that money that they're going to save and not building the big $3 billion diversion to build a land bridge and do a smaller diversion and do all these other projects that are going to help, build the coast up faster.
Does anybody know?
Well, the science is, you know, for years the science was saying build a big diversion, but that has changed.
The science has changed or the desire has changed?
I think the desire has changed. I mean, the folks in Plaquemines Parish and Grand Isle, the fishermen, they have felt that they have not had a voice in this process all along. But with this new governor, they got a new voice, and they were able to stop it. Is it right? Is it wrong? It's just the facts that we're dealing with. But, you know, I told Gordy Dove, this is on him. This is your baby, and you're going to have to live with it. And, you know, the governor's the governor. We're going to, you know, do it. He has the power to make this happen. But we got to build that coast up somehow. We got to make sure we have the hurricane protection we need. And they say they have the plans to do it a different way. So we'll see what happens.
Seems like you have to decide what's best for the entire state or what's best for people below the diversion. That's what it comes
down to?
That's
the battle. I mean, the folks, absolutely, if the diversion goes as the big diversion is built, those folks will suffer. And they will have their lives, you know, changed for good. So, but I think the governor has heard their complaints and heard their
and has acted on it, I guess. Thank you, Pat.
He's acted on it.
Appreciate it. Eight sixteen now on this Tuesday morning, June 3rd. Somebody texted in and said today was National Donut Day, and I hate to be contradictory, but June 6th is National Donut Day. June 6th is National Donut Day. Legislative session continues in Baton Rouge. We're really getting into the meat of it now, although there has been some foolishness going on with some chemtrail legislation that's making national news, and it just, who's ready? Okay, good. With some stuff that's making national news, Matt Willard joins us now, state representative. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking the time. I hate to start with this, but, you know, I see some national stories about this chemtrail nonsense in the House of Representatives and making it illegal, and it just, you know, it seems like we're trying to change this tax base. We're trying to change this, trying to change that to attract businesses. Then we're weakening ethics laws, and we're also passing this kind of foolishness in the state legislature, which I can't believe makes us look forward at all, does it?
No, not at all. It's nonsensical to me. The author, when she presented the bill, said the white smoke behind a plane, when you see a plane in the sky, that's the chemtrails. They're dropping different metals into the sky to try to control the weather, reflect sun rays back into space. It's completely nonsensical to me. I think the legislature is better served when our eyes are on the prize and actually addressing issues that matter the most to the people of Louisiana.
It just, again, seems like it does. By the way, I should say we're going to have somebody on tomorrow that dispels conspiracy theories. This goes back. This is the tinfoil hat crowd. This goes back a long way. This is what's the guy's name? The actor with the hell, whatever, conspiracy theory, whatever the movie was. This is just craziness, and I can't believe the Republicans had voted for it. Let's talk about the serious stuff going on when it comes to insurance. I've spoken to numerous people about this coverage where you could buy just, I forgot the name of it now, where you could buy just a little
stated,
bit of stated coverage.
Value.
Stated
yep.
value, that's yep. it. Thank you, Matt. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so that bill would allow you to, say if you do not, it only applies if you don't have a mortgage on your home. But if you don't have a mortgage on your home, then you could purchase an insurance policy for a specific amount. So let's say, Tommy, that you're a contractor and you figure you can repair your home with $50,000 in materials. So you may only want to get a policy for $50,000 because you can do the work. All you need is the money to actually purchase the materials. For me, I think it's a pro-consumer bill. And going back to 2020, 2021, I've been asked by constituents, families, family members, and friends, why can they not purchase such a policy here in the state of Louisiana? So I think it's a good tool that the people in Louisiana will now have. Hopefully, if this bill can make it all the way through the process, it is now on the Senate side. There was pushback from the insurance industry as well as from the insurance agents. Their main pushback was that it's kind of deceptive because people will purchase these policies and think that they have full coverage when in actuality they do not. But for me, I mean, I think if myself or if you, Tommy, bought one of these policies, you would fully understand that that policy would only cover you for the specific dollar amount that you requested. So I think it's something that we need in the state of Louisiana because right now you have a lot of homeowners that do not have insurance because they own their home outright. And maybe if they could purchase a policy for a smaller dollar value, they would do that. So I think this is a good policy for us.
I think that not everybody went to UNO, as did you and I, Matt. And my concern is that a lot of people are not going to realize that. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back with stated coverage. I think there was also some confusion because I've spoke to the commissioner earlier, and he seemed to imply that people with a mortgage could get it, which would just open an entirely different can of worms of who got paid first, because you would have to pay off the people that held the mortgage first, which would leave the homeowner with nothing. Or I would think if you had a mortgage, the lending institution is going to require you to at least have that much coverage, because I was in a position after Katrina, and that's why I'm very cognizant of it now, where I was terribly underinsured. It was pre-divorce, and the house was just about paid for it, but the coverage had fallen way below the value of the house because it was only for the unencumbered part. We'll pick it up. We come back. Jason Hughes, State Representative, 821 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Jace, Matt Willard, Louisiana State Representative, and we're talking about stated value on homeowners insurance if your house is paid off and you don't have a mortgage. And Matt, my concern, and I was kidding about not everybody went to UNO like you and I did, but people understanding, because, and I keep saying this over and over with the people I talk to, but I think in the calm of Tuesday, June 3rd, everything quiet, yeah, my house is worth $200,000, give me $50,000 of coverage so I can take care of $50,000 worth of damage. That sounds good now, but if something catastrophic happens, it's not going to sound so good. I'm going to be looking for somebody to bail me out. Thoughts?
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I do believe our insurance marketplace needs some flexibility right now, and homeowners are having to make a tough choice. If they cannot afford the premium for full coverage, then in a lot of cases they just have to sell their home. And in that case, if they don't have a mortgage, right? Right. Not if they have a mortgage, but like you said earlier.
But if they don't have a mortgage and they can't afford insurance, they don't have to sell their home.
They don't have to have it. Correct.
Right, yeah.
They don't have to have it. But like you said earlier, this does apply if you have a mortgage as well. I just pulled the bill up and looked at it.
It does.
The way it would work. Yes, it does. The way it would work is you have to have coverage at least to cover the principal on what you owe to the bank. So in that case, you know, if there's a loss, you would have the money to pay off the mortgage, but then you wouldn't have any money to repair the home,
right,
which is just like somebody who owns their home outright who decides to forego insurance coverage.
And see, and that goes to what I said about me before Katrina, where I was terribly underinsured, and if something had happened to my home, I would have been screwed, blued, and tattooed. Because the house, you know, was worth X, and I had like maybe a fourth of that in flood insurance and maybe less than that in homeowners, because I was only insured for the mortgaged value, and the insurance agent didn't keep up with that. Now I am fully insured. I just don't think that's a good position to put people in. But you're saying if people have the choice, they'll act knowledgeably?
Well, what I'm saying is if people can't afford full coverage premium, then they won't be able to have insurance anyway. So at least this would allow them to have some type of insurance, some type of coverage for their home. We have a lot of homeowners who do not have insurance right now because they just simply cannot afford it. So I think this would allow more homeowners to purchase at least some form, some coverage of insurance on their property.
What else got your attention in the legislative session?
Oh, I mean, it's been insurance talk all session. The governor signed a few bills last week, you know, some focus on tax issues, and obviously the budget session concludes next Thursday. So this is the moment in session where things start to change rapidly. Big changes usually occur in the budget and in the supplemental funding bill. So really just paying attention to all of that and, you know, really saying a hope and a prayer that these insurance bills will reduce premiums for the people of Louisiana, because the crisis just continues to get out of control, and the people of Louisiana truly need some relief.
To revisit stated value for a second, you said the insurance company was not nuts about it. The industry mm-hmm. didn't like it. So why would they write it? Or would you can't force them to write insurance, can you? Or would this law force them to do that?
Yeah, this law would force them to offer a stated value policy for policies that they write in the state of Louisiana. What they were saying is that when they offered this before, it wasn't really attractive. They also said that the savings that homeowners would realize from a stated value policy wouldn't be that great. And I just don't see how that can be the case. For full coverage, if you need $500,000 of coverage, and then if this passes and you say you just want to get $50,000 worth of coverage, you should realize significant savings on that. And if you don't, I think that's a problem in and of itself.
But it goes back to the nature of insurance, which is you're insuring yourself against loss and you're gambling. And if you lose, then you got to be willing to accept that. When it comes to the part about
ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of casino-style games like bingo, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. T&Cs apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Having the stated coverage about the amount that you owe, a lending institution is going to require that as a condition of your mortgage, right? To escrow the insurance?
Yeah, and I think that's, and I believe that's the reason he wrote it like that in the bill, because you at least have to protect the bank's interest in the property.
I think so. All right, thank you. Appreciate your time, Matt. We'll talk to you again. Matt Willard, Louisiana State Representative. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Scott Boyle about that garbage truck situation. Also, Norma Jean Matei, a professor of engineering at UNO, about 1,500 bridges in Louisiana over that amount being rated in poor condition. Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:40, 20 till 9, Scott Boyle joins us, District Engineer, Administrator, Louisiana Department of Transportation Development. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Tommy. Appreciate you having me on.
Boy, talk about actions having consequences. One garbage truck driver makes a bad decision and it affects a lot of people for a long time, huh?
This was certainly complicated. This wasn't your run-of-the-mill, just, rear-end collision. It got towed away in an hour for sure.
So tell me what's going on with the Carrollton Avenue on-ramp to I-10 westbound and also the other part of it, the I-10 westbound. Wait, that is the only part of it, right? Straighten me out here, Scott.
As a result of this crash, we're in week two right now. We had two ramps affected. We had the Carrollton on-ramp to I-10 west. That's the ramp that the garbage truck is currently on right now. We have a contractor in place. Bow Brothers started last week. They started building the emergency support tower system right now. We're actually ahead of schedule, Tommy. I had put out there that we were clipping towards June 13th. Weather permitting, it looks like we're gonna be clipping a little bit ahead of schedule on that. So we fingers crossed on that one. And once that happens, the garbage truck's going to be removed. We're going to get that ramp open. The other ramp, which is the one with the damage on it from this crash, that's the I-10 West exit ramp to Airline North. That ramp is going to be closed for months. We're starting the process of building and designing a permanent repair on this. So that's going to require a design team. It's going to require construction. We've gotten permission that we can expedite a lot of these processes in place to try to get that ramp open as soon as possible. But right now we're looking at least 3 months or more to get that ramp back open.
So the shoring of the Carrollton on-ramp to remove the garbage truck, that's temporary, or then there has to be a permanent repair to that as well?
We're gonna keep that shoring in place right now. The issue is that garbage truck's leaning on some critical infrastructure, and we don't want to get in a situation where when we move that garbage truck off of that column, that there's a possibility that ramp above that's damaged could collapse and just cause a catastrophe, a really bad situation for anyone. So we're being very cautious and methodical in how we do this to make sure we get this right and make safety our top priority.
So you put the temporary reinforcement up, you remove the garbage truck, then you inspect and see what needs to be done, but it will be open because of the temporary reinforcement, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the Carrollton ramp will be reopened no later than June 13th. So that's the upshot of this right now. We Bow Brothers has been out there every day. They worked this weekend. They were doing soil prep last week, and they're building all these support towers. So, they're almost finished that, and once we do that, then we can get the tow trucks and law enforcement in there and start clearing out that garbage truck that's been there for 2 weeks by now.
This is going to be very expensive. Somebody wants to know who's paying for this, I presume, the insurance company or the garbage truck?
Well, certainly there's going to be claims, and I don't want to speculate, but typically when these type of things happen, there's insurance claims and reimbursements, but there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot of back and forth on this before it gets all sorted out.
But the state goes after the money, correct?
Absolutely, gotcha. Absolutely. We certainly are going to make sure that everything is accounted for, and that the proper parties that are responsible are going to be, held accountable. And it's too early yet. We're still waiting on a police report once they get in there. But certainly, that's a top priority of us to make sure that we pursue any type of damages that are caused to our infrastructure.
So to oversimplify it, if I knock down a light pole due to my negligence, I'm going to get a bill for that from the state, right?
Yes. Yeah. Typically, what we do is we assess that damage and we work through the attorney general's office and they work very closely with, someone's insurance company. And I mean, there's back and forth and there's two sides to a story. So it's certainly not a one way street that when something happens that it's an automatic. But if it is determined that there is fault, we certainly will pursue those damages to the fullest extent of the law.
Thank you, Scott. Quick break. We'll come back, talk to Norma Jean Matei, a professor of engineering at UNO, about some bridges in the state rated poor, over 1,500 of them. 8:45, quarter till 9. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. All right, 8:50, 10 till 9, quickly to Norma Jean Matei. Dr. Norma Jean Matei, professor of engineering at UNO, past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. How are you, Prof?
I am doing well. How about you, Tommy?
I'm all right. I'm looking at this story. Over 1,500 bridges out of 12,000 in Louisiana classified as poor condition, according to the Federal Highway Administration. What does that say to you? Does that get your eyebrows up? Does that make you worried?
Well, actually, it has me worried less than before. So a few years back, we had more bridges that across the nation that were in poor condition, mm-hmm. and we've made significant progress. So each of the departments of transportation of the states have really focused efforts on getting their stable of bridges, all of those bridge assets, from poor condition into a fair designation. And so we still have work to do, but we're going in the right direction, I think, both as a state, Louisiana, and then also nationally.
Does poor mean imminent collapse or not necessarily?
That's a good question, but no, it does not. So it depends. So each good, fair, and poor, it's a range. Mm-hmm. So within poor, you can have bridges that, yeah, you got some damage here, or you've got some deterioration or corrosion, and it needs to be addressed now. And then you could have bridges that they're in such poor condition that they no longer can carry the loads, the heavyweight trucks, and so they'll be posted so that they can safely carry vehicular traffic, passenger cars, but not heavy loads. And then you'll have some bridges where they're just in such poor shape that they will be taken out of service and until they can be repaired or replaced. And so that's the range of bridges in the poor condition.
I was thinking about Nudie yesterday. I passed a church and they were doing some repairs, not because of church, but because of you coming on about this. And I was thinking about the engineering aspect of people don't realize that when you build something, you need to budget in, you need to factor in maintenance. Is that something
right.
that people often lose sight of?
Yeah, even the people that, like me, the engineers, we mm-hmm. really aren't that good at putting together a program where not just putting the whatever it is, a bridge, in place and in service, but once you get it in service, if you can keep it in good condition, it's going to last a long time. But if you start letting it slip, just like your automobile, if you stop putting oil in it, mm-hmm. pretty soon you're going to ruin that asset. You're going to need a new vehicle if you take it that far. And same with bridges. Same with bridges. Okay. And we're not that good at putting aside those funds that you could use every year to keep those bridges in good or fair condition.
Is that we as a state or we as a country?
We as a country. Probably we as a world.
Yeah, pretty much. I hate to say it, but it's human nature, really. I think it is kind of where you
right.
want it. But, you know, it's like Norma Jean, as a young homeowner, I used to cut the grass on Saturday, and I would think that there would be one time where it would finally all be over with. And then I realized it's never over because it's an ongoing maintenance routine, right?
Right. Yeah, it's just something that you're going to have to suck up and do.
Did anything about this report get your attention specifically about any one bridge or anything?
No, I think that we've got a good handle on our poor bridges. They know they've got them prioritized, and as funding becomes available, they'll be able to attack those that make the most where it makes the most sense. And that can be a combination of it's in poor condition, it's in a route where this is really necessary for movement of, say if it's in a farming community, you really want those bridges available for when harvest season comes around.
Thank you, Norma Jean. Appreciate it. As always, Norma Jean Matei, professor of engineering at UNO, my alma mater, past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. We'll talk to Jason Williams next hour, 8:54, time for traffic, WWL. All right, 9:10, so we know the LSU Super Regional is going to take place on Saturday, Sunday, and maybe Monday if necessary. Jason Williams joins us now, New Orleans DA, to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. How you doing, Jason?
I'm good, Mr. Tucker. How are you?
I'm all right. That's my daddy. Call me Tommy, please.
Right
let's,
on.
Let's
okay.
talk about, is there any doubt that this is Antoine Massey on this video?
Yeah. I'm not gonna confirm or deny or comment. I'm gonna leave that to the men and women that are putting themselves in harm's way to get him back into custody. They'll decide how to answer that question. I think it speaks for itself.
All right, let me ask you then about some of the claims that are made on it. I don't know if he's a jailhouse lawyer or what he thinks, but you can't just walk out of jail because somebody. I don't understand what the video is trying. Do you understand what it's trying to say?
This has all been so bizarre. I'm not going to get into trying to translate what he's trying to say or get into a back and forth with a fugitive. What I will tell you is there is one singular place to establish your innocence or prove yourself not guilty, and that is a court of law. It's not Facebook. It's not Instagram, and it damn sure ain't on the run.
Nope. Let's talk about what we know now that we didn't know, what, 15 days ago, 16 days ago? How many days has it been?
It's about 16 days at this point. Maybe I might be out of count, but it's been too many.
Yeah, May 16th was the escape. What do we know now that we didn't know then? Anything, Jason?
We know that there was a lot of activity in the jail, on the jail calls. My digital forensics team, which is headed up by Holly Freeman, has been combing through volumes and volumes of jail calls. They've been able to connect these fugitives with friends and family in the community, some of which has led to arrests, some of which has led to other information that provided other leads. So we know these guys were planning on getting out. We know that they were planning on getting out that day because they were trying to set up rides and meeting spots and talking to folks they were interested in about getting together and meeting. We also know that there was a failed attempt in the 1st of May, two inmates from the exact same cell. And that was not reported to anyone or known by anyone outside of the jail until the 22nd of this month when that case appeared on the dockets in court. We know that a third of the monitors were down based upon statements by the sheriff. And we know that a large portion of the locks had malfunctioned and had not been replaced or dealt with by the sheriff. I think that's sort of sums up what's factually on the record and undisputed right now.
Let's talk about what's going on with this. I don't understand what the sheriff was trying to do with your office and investigating and Liz Murrell's office. Who's investigating what?
We referred, before any action by the sheriff, we referred the case to the attorney general. I thought it was best that there was one lead. This was after I went in with the NOPD forensic team to dust the entire crime scene for fingerprints and take photographs that could be used in court and to test for DNA of that hole in those bars that had been cut. After we did that, the AG and I met again. We had met a number of times, and we communicate every day almost about this, and we decided that she would be the single point of contact for receiving information, single point of contact for investigating this and dealing with the fallout of this and the issue in Tangipahoa, because it seems as if this is not just happening in Orleans Parish. And then the following week, the sheriff is spinning her wheels and busying her office's time with trying to have us recused, which is the most bizarre thing I've seen outside of how long it took to let the public know what happened.
Can you comment on the investigation about other employees at the prison that were involved or who knew what when, or is that investigation ongoing?
It is an ongoing investigation. The AG is pursuing all of that. Any and all evidence, reports, recordings, video recordings about how these folks came to be on the first floor, none of whom should have been on the first floor because they're dangerous. That's going to be going to the AG. And they're pulling on every lead, every thread about maybe who this deputy was that Williams speaks of, who was assigned to the floor at the time. And there's going to be a thorough investigation of who knew what and when and played any role, however slight, whether that's turning your back on something you knew what was going to happen, whether it was providing them the instrumentality used to defeat those bars, any and all culpability.
Do you have any idea what kind of timeline you're looking at?
I think the every investigation has its own timeline. I think there's an exigency with all of the investigative agencies that are working on this. I think they realize that the jail is compromised, as stated by the sheriff. They realize that the sheriff's office really can't be a credible agency to its law enforcement partners until they root it out and they're certain that anybody that played any role is still not working over at the jail.
So yeah, that was my question. Coming up with Joe.
The urgency is there.
Yeah, Jason, that was the reason for the question, because it's like, until you know who was in on it and who wasn't, how do you know that the jail is safe today? Because you don't know that they're not in cahoots with prisoners today, right? I mean, am I right or not?
You're absolutely right. So that one cell that they attempted to break out of once, and that they 10 men were able to escape from on that morning, that has been welded closed. And the back has steel reinforcements, so we know there's no vulnerabilities there. But in terms of the human beings that played any role, I don't think we can have a whole lot of confidence in anything coming from that agency, whether it's courthouse security or whether it's custody and control of inmates, until we for a fact know that anyone who played a role in this jailbreak is not still in that office and still working, or any of the protocols have not been changed.
So how does that affect your office, whether it's prosecutions or investigations, et cetera?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. Care, custody, and control is important to my office and every citizen in this community, because we don't want another jailbreak. And the sheriff's office is responsible for the security of the courthouse, right? So a jailbreak and threats to witnesses has a ripple effect on the criminal justice system, because jurors may be not as willing to show up when they get those jury summons because of the perception of a lack of security coming from the sheriff's office. Witnesses, victims who were under the impression, and rightfully so, that these inmates who were supposed to be in custody, who were convicted, were not going to get out. They're not going to have the comfort level they need to come to court. So I feel like all of that's compromised right now, and I've asked city council and the CAO to look at the possibility of a private security company securing the courthouse, at least the outside, the entrances and exits, for our victims, for our witnesses, for our judges, and for the jurors who come to play a very vital role in the criminal legal system.
Have you had any conversations with the mayor about any of this?
I have not.
Okay. Has she contacted you?
She has not.
Okay. When it comes to the search for the inmates that are the escapees that are still on the loose, is your office involved in this, or are you getting briefings update daily on what's going on? Because I know that it involves, I guess, some people that prosecuted these cases in your office, right?
Yeah, we're getting updates and briefings on a very regular basis. My office is handling the digital forensics portion of it, which is the jail calls, mm-hmm. and we're getting close to going through all of that information, and that's all been provided, and it's going straight to the FBI and Brian Fair, who is the man on the street for the U.S. Marshals Service, who's doing an absolutely amazing job. I mean, I just really have to take a moment to say Brian Fair and the U.S. Marshals Service have been very quietly doing just amazing work for the people of this community, not just in this case, but in other cases as well. But we're going to keep combing through that to figure out if there were any threats made via phone, or any plans made going back further than the past 7 days, looking back 30 days. We don't know how long they were planning and plotting this, to see what we can find out.
So the reward's up to $50,000. I'm just wondering, you've been doing this a long time. You know, you got peers and so forth. Is there a point where it becomes either a tipping point with money where, they won't do it for somebody, won't turn somebody in for 50, but they will for 100, or conversely, where it becomes personal and not business, where it doesn't matter how much money it is, I'm not going to turn them in?
We live in a capitalist society. I was talking to a group of trial lawyers the other day, and they're thinking about putting up some more money. I do think there's a point in which cousins will turn on cousins and brothers will turn on brothers. And honestly, Tommy, given this video that surfaced, and given what you've heard from the families of these folks, I mean, why wouldn't they just go to their families and say, turn me in and collect this money? Mm. I mean, if you care about your family, if you care about proving that you're not guilty, I mean, that seems to make a whole lot of sense. But honestly,
turn me in, get the reward. Turn it in, turn me in, get the reward, and use it for your defense, right? That's what you're saying?
I'm saying for your mother, for your grandmother. I mean, this is not going to end well for either of these two. Mm-hmm. If you thought you were innocent of everything you were charged with, breaking out of a jail is only going to create new charges. And so I'm just saying, from a human standpoint, from a family standpoint, turn yourself in, call your family, tell them where to tell the authorities to meet you. Let them earn that money. I mean, this whole thing is just so bizarre, Tom. I can't quite wrap my head around some of the thinking that's come out of it.
When it comes to, you know, the real effects of this with your employees, with victims, with witnesses, et cetera, this has been going on for May 16th since then. Do you have a number for them? Do you have a number about how many people have been affected? Obviously, the whole area with the escaped convicts, but directly impacted by this?
Look, directly, we've got children who aren't in camp, who aren't in their homes. We've got their parents living other places out of the parish. And that is very unsettling. They can't work while they're relocated. They can't get settled. They can't make sense out of what's occurred directly. And let me say this. I think that small businesses, whether it's restaurants, whether it's hotels, this is a national news story. Mm-hmm. This is a black eye for the city of New Orleans. And I think, you know, summer season is hard for our restaurants. Anyone who's decided not to come to the city of New Orleans because of the news they've seen on this jailbreak, I think they are directly impacted as well. And we have to bring this to a close so we can get back to the business of being who we are.
Yeah, I don't want to push too much on this, but I would think the more you put out there, the more it hurts you. So I would think a video like this would help maybe in the capture or not necessarily?
You know, I mean, the world, the internet is undefeated. And you know, the things that get posted, I don't really have the words, but in law enforcement, information has a big value.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's just more information. So I would think you would want them to keep putting out videos if they could, right?
No comment on that.
Gotcha. All right. We'll take a break. Pick it up with Jason Williams. Talk about crime in general in the city when we come back. 923 traffic. Taking a break. WWL. 928, spending some time with District Attorney Jason Williams. And Jason, it occurs to me that but for the prison escape, I'm not sure that there's a lot of crime we're talking about. Tell me what's going on with your office and crime in the city, et cetera.
So, I mean, we're still leading the nation in terms of when you look over the last 3 years, reduction in violent crime, but reduction in all categories, mm-hmm. faster and in a larger volume than any other place. And that's including the terror attack. And that has been done by using technology in my office, digital forensics, open source intelligence, looking at using everything that's out there, Ring doorbell, crime cameras, using social media posts, and unprecedented partnerships and collaboration. Ann Kirkpatrick is one of the best partners in the world. Her homicide detectives are working daily at charge conference and at grip meetings with my homicide unit prosecutors, Josh Jackson from the ATF, weighing in to take guns and drugs off the street. Then we go in and close the business if it was in any way participating in that. That's yielding real results. The last time I think I was on the show before the jailbreak, we're talking about ridding Hardin Park close to St. Augustine of drug dealing, mm-hmm. gun possessions, and some of the violence. We now have 18th Ward, Lowry Cruz, and his team of young people with kids programming that park, teaching them sports activities, breathing new life into that community. So New Orleans is transforming itself from a public safety standpoint. I know that this jailbreak is distracting from that good news story, and I'm looking forward to having all these 10 men back in custody so we can get back to focusing on this work, focusing on driving our numbers down anymore. We've made a point with the chief to say being out of the number one spot in terms of the murder capital, that's not good enough. We want to get out of the top 10, and then we want to get out of the top 20, and we want to put strategies in place that we can lock in and institutionalize that will keep working regardless of who the DA is, regardless of who the police chief is, and regardless of who the mayor is.
And we talk about, you know, three-legged stools and so forth. From what you're saying, it sounds like the suspects the police are arresting, the reports they're giving you, it's stuff that your office can work on and get convictions on.
That's absolutely right. And when it's not, Tommy, we don't just throw up our hands. They don't just throw up their hands. I've got a district screener. That's the intake prosecutor in every police district in the city. They're with the police more than they're with our office, who are working with them to figure out if there's any gaps or deficiencies so we can fix that before that case gets to court, so that we have more cases that go from arrest and probable cause for arrest to proof beyond a reasonable doubt in front of a New Orleans jury.
And the judges are an important part of that as well. Thoughts?
They're a huge part. They're a huge part. I mean, they get to decide. They're the deciders in chief of the cases. We just get to present them. They decide what bonds will be set, if there will be a bond that's set. And sometimes they decide guilt and innocence. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that usher the juries through that process when they decide and sit in judgment about whether or not we've proved the case beyond a reasonable doubt together.
Are there any judges that are for whatever reason you feel as though you've proven the case and then you're not getting a guilty verdict that on a consistent basis or not?
Look, when I was since the time that I've started my practice in 1997, there's been cases that I thought should have gone the other way that don't. Mm-hmm. On the civil side and the criminal side. I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback that thing. I'm just trying to figure out how to make our cases stronger so there's not an option for it not to go our way. I will say that Section J, Judge Germany has stepped away for medical leave. Calvin Johnson stepped in. Chief Judge retired Calvin Johnson, who's an amazing jurist, has stepped in. He is running that docket now at the request of the Supreme Court. He was in my office yesterday. We hosted him as well as the public defender's office. My chief of trials, my deputy chief of trials, and my attorneys for that section of court. And we're working methodically to reduce the docket in Section J, which had ballooned to an out-of-control number. And we're trying to figure out what wasn't done there, why weren't cases moving faster there, to figure out ways to move them faster, whether that means at some point bringing in a second judge ad hoc so that we can try those cases that can't be resolved faster. But that number is too big in Section J, and we're working collaboratively and constitutionally to bring that number down, and we're probably going to be meeting on a very regular basis now that Judge Johnson is in there so that we can focus on that unusually large docket to get those numbers down.
How did the cases get assigned to sections for those of us that are not intimately aware of the system?
There's a random allotment process that happens in the clerk's office. It's one of the clerk's responsibilities when charges are brought. They're randomly selected to go to a different section of court. And there's, by law, supposed to be, and by rule of court, no rule of thumb about them going to a specific section. That way everyone's got a fair shot at getting in any one of the 12 sections of court.
Keep justice blind, I guess, the idea. But I guess I'm wondering, Jason, if one docket is so overloaded, is there any provision for the other docket that maybe has openings or is not as overloaded to take over or not?
You know, there's been conversations about that, basically burdening or shifting the load to another section of court. It wouldn't be fair to the other judges that are being efficient and are efficiently moving their cases. Also, there's an argument it wouldn't be fair to the defendants because then they would not have that random allotment that the rules of court apply for, which is, I assume, why the Supreme Court is focusing on providing more resources to help us fix what's broken in Section J. So that docket size can be more commensurate with what you see in the other 11 sections of court.
And one thing backs up into the other, because if you got people that are waiting for trial and the docket's backed up, they're either in the Orleans Justice Center, and we've already documented the problems there, or it brings me to my next question, which is bail, ankle monitoring, magistrates, and so forth. Does that seem to be working out for you?
I'm still not happy with the process of electronic monitoring. I think ASAP does a really good job with what they do in terms of protocols. I still believe that there are certain individuals charged with certain crimes that don't deserve an ankle monitor. We don't need to make the police department or the LSP's job harder by having offenders who've proven themselves to be dangerous because of one arrest. I don't believe they should get a second chance to be out. I think if a person is supposed to be under curfew, home incarceration or home in school or home in work, if they're found once not to be where they're supposed to be, I think they should be yanked back into court. I think it's very dangerous for survivors of domestic violence, for stores that people have been stealing from repeatedly. I don't think those individuals should be released on an ankle monitor, because I don't think an ankle monitor can solve that problem. That being said, there are certain instances where persons could benefit from an ankle monitor without putting the public at risk. But we've got to make sure that the judge that put that person on an ankle monitor every day is checking those reports to make sure that person is where they're supposed to be in real time, or at least every single day, right? That way we won't have an incident where a person's on an ankle monitor, but they're putting a gun on someone in the French Quarter, or worse yet, shooting a gun at someone in the French Quarter.
I know you're
or
busy.
Anywhere in the city, for that matter.
I know you're busy. Real quick thoughts on juvenile justice and the way it's working in the city.
You know, I think that our children are living in a space of unprecedented post-traumatic stress in terms of what they've seen before they reach the age of majority. And we have to go upstream and figure out why young people are falling in. A lot of that falls on the work of people outside of the criminal justice system. But if you intervene in a person's life, whether their grandmother was killed or their father was killed, or they see something or they're abused, if we intervene with the right interventions at the right time, those persons don't develop a poor relationship with violence and become offenders themselves. And I think we've got to start focusing on public safety in that space, because arresting and convicting is not the only answer, and it's not the only thing in our toolbox as a city. And I hope the next mayor and the next city council will be focused on those upstream work, so that we're not just continually pulling people out of the river, but figuring out why they're falling in.
I want to invite you on one time when we are away from an election, talk about judges. I know you got a very long history of being an attorney, and now the district attorney appearing before judges. Just to educate the electorate on what it takes, because elections have consequences, and you talked about the backup in Section J. Just what makes for a good judge, what makes for a bad judge, and what the electorate should look for. We'll do that in the future, all right?
I'd love to do that, Tom, because there's a lot of nuance, but the first rule of thumb is showing up early, staying late, and whatever you do, you got to show up every single day if you work for the people of the city.
Yep. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Jason Williams, New Orleans District Attorney. We'll take a break, talk to John Cuvion. He's got a new survey out about how New Orleanians feel about the leaders and where things stand with the mayoral and sheriff's races. 9:40, 20 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:47, 13 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to John Cuvion, Louisiana-based pollster, member of JMC Analytics and Polling, who did a new study. How you doing, John?
Really good. Thanks for having me on your show today.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me what you asked and what you found.
So basically, this was a poll, given that we have the municipal/parish-wide elections in Orleans Parish coming up in October, with following next month. I did a poll about various parish-wide elected officials that are on the ballot, as well as the popularity of several of those same elected officials. What I found was this.
Wait, when was this done, John?
Go ahead.
When was it done? That's important.
Oh, it was done Yes. It was done last week.
Okay. May 27th to 28th, right?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
So it's a pretty recent poll. And so the first important point about the poll is the popularity aspect of it, which was of the elected officials polled, there was some variability. In other words, Congressman Troy Carter, who represents nearly all of Orleans Parish, he and Helena Marino have nearly identical 3-to-1 approval-disapproval ratings. The district attorney, Jason Williams, is 49 approve, 30 disapprove. Michelle Woodfork is 49-19. Sheriff Hudson, however, has a 3-to-1 disapprove-to-approve job approval rating, which, of course, as you could appreciate with the election coming up in several months, would be very concerning for her. And then the other half of the poll, we were talking about ballot test, which we did the sheriff, we did the mayor. And in the mayor's race, Helena Marino is in a very dominant position, as in she is over 50% of the vote, and Oliver Thomas is running second in the low 20s. And Helena has built a big lead with a bipartisan and biracial coalition, even pulling 29% of the black vote. And then in the sheriff's race, which we also polled, Michelle Woodfork has a big lead, and Sheriff Hudson is, her poll numbers are quite abysmal in the low teens. About 40% are undecided. So that's the sum total of all that was polled last week.
When it comes, John, explain this, if you will, please, about the favorable, because, you know, you got answers, very favorable, right, somewhat favorable, somewhat unfavorable, very unfavorable, no opinion ever heard. The two you compare that you were talking about, that's where the big difference is, right? When you look at a poll like this about favorable or unfavorable, tell me how you do that.
Right. So typically for these kinds of approval ratings, I lump together very favorable and somewhat favorable, and similarly very unfavorable and somewhat unfavorable. And what I'm most interested in are two things. Number one, do you have more favorables than unfavorables? That's the important thing. Mm-hmm. But the other thing, too, is what is the spread? Because if, let's say, you're a Troy Carter or a Helena Marino where the numbers are 66-22, well, that's pretty much, you're very well loved and admired and have little to worry about. Whereas if you're Sheriff Hudson, where it's 21 favorable and 63 unfavorable, that's very problematic because you don't have a lot of people with no opinion of you. So those are the kinds of things I look for, which is not only the absolute number, but the spread. And ideally, you want to be above 50. But to me, having more favorables than unfavorables is still acceptable.
Is the DA up for re-election or not?
Actually, no, he would be 2026.
That's what I thought. It was a 6-year term, yeah, because he was elected in 2020.
Correct.
Anything else, John, before we let you go, that that was of interest here?
The thing that is interesting to me is the sheriff's race, to be at given present poll numbers, is going to be more suspenseful than the mayor's race, just because you have a much higher undecided percentage for that particular office.
Really?
In other words, 42% were undecided in the poll that I had done, whereas in the mayor's race, it's down to 15, as in 15% undecided.
And that was after the jailbreak, right?
That's correct.
Wow. Interesting. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. John Cuvion, Louisiana-based pollster and founder of JMC Analytics and Polling. And I was talking to Jason Williams about judicial elections. And I don't want to hurt myself here with my mechanic friends or refrigeration friends, but if I remember correctly, when you open an air conditioning system, whether it's in a car or the house, you have to evacuate it to make sure you get all the moisture out, because otherwise moisture, when combined with refrigerant under pressure, can be corrosive and it can cause some serious problems. That's why if they don't evacuate the system properly, that you got a time bomb waiting to go off, right? That the system's not going to perform or last. Let's put it that way. And I think it's the same when it comes to electing a judge, because it's a very important part of that three-legged stool. And I don't know that people properly vet judges. And if they don't vet them properly, you wind up with a situation where he or she doesn't do their job and they got a big backlog of cases. And then it puts everything off from there. So we'll talk more about that as the time gets closer. 9:53, 7 till 10. We'll find out what Dave Cohen's got planned for us today. In for Newell Norman on WWL.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.